KUT Public Media Studios in Austin, this is City Hall Hustle. I'm your host, Wells Dunbar.
Say aye.
Aye.
I oppose, say no. Passes on a vote of 6-0.
The council adopted the Downtown Austin Plan in late 2011. With it, the council okayed what's called the Downtown Density Bonus Program. It basically says that developers who want to build more densely than the standards allow would have to offer certain community benefits. Things like on-site affordable housing or paying into a fund for affordable housing elsewhere. But nearly a year and a half later, Austin's still waiting on specific guidelines for the Density Bonus Program. In the meantime, developers have used Central Urban Redevelopment, or CURE zoning, to build more densely. It suggests certain community benefits, but is far less prescriptive. A resolution this week from council members Kathy Tovo and Laura Morrison calls to kick CURE to the curb and have the Downtown Density Bonus Program ready for council consideration in June.
This basically puts a priority rush on the Downtown Density Bonus Program as it relates to CURE rezoning.
At the council's Tuesday work session, Tovo described the resolution as a positive for the city and developers alike.
In the interest of providing the kind of consistency and predictability to the development community that we often hear they would like, stating a guiding principle, stating that this is going to be our guiding principle from here on out, I think makes good sense.
But Mayor Lee Leffingwell had a different take.
I don't think it has any validity. I don't think it changes the factors that are in play right now regarding the legitimacy of bartering for a zoning approval.
It's a note Leffingwell's sounded for a while now. Let's rewind to the council's March 7th meeting.
What we're dealing with here at its very best is a gray area of the law, and its worst is a clear violation of the law in considering and requiring a payment or compensation in return for approval of a zoning case.
For third and final reading, zoning approval of the Hotel Zsa Zsa. The zoning request, CURE. The applicant, influential zoning attorney Richard Suttle. He argued the downtown density program wasn't ready to go yet.
You have, I believe, in your downtown plan, a concept. There are things that need to be fleshed out in that concept plan.
One of the things that needs fleshing out, according to Suttle, exactly who would take the money for affordable housing.
If we wanted to do that, who would we pay?
The Hotel Zsa Zsa is somewhat of a special case. A mixed-use development including both hotel and condo units. And Suttle is a deft attorney. He argued that the extra density they would get goes towards the hotel portion of the development, not the residential units. That's because the downtown density plan has affordable housing requirements in place for residential development, but not non-residential projects. It was all a little too much for Councilmember Bill Spellman. He basically argued that while Suttle abided by the letter of the law, he neglected the spirit.
Whether it's codified or not, we have the discretion to uphold it, and I intend to do so.
The CURE rezoning narrowly passed. And should the priority rush on codifying the downtown density plan pass Thursday, Hotel Zsa Zsa could be one of the last big CURE projects council okays. I'm Wells Dunbar with KUT News, and this is City Hall Hustle. If this Tuesday's fevered work session was any indication, it should be a hot meeting this Thursday. Here to help take the temperature is Mike Kanan with In Fact Daily. Good to see you, Mike.
Good to see you, Wells.
So, this downtown density bonus item from Laura Morrison and Kathy Tovo seems to reflect a real impatience with how long it's taken to finalize the program and all the resulting CURE cases that have come through since then.
Indeed. This thing goes back a little while. It goes back to the December 2011 passage of the downtown plan, which had this downtown density bonus program in it, which was intended to replace the CURE zoning in the downtown region, basically as a means for the city to bargain for affordable housing in exchange for increased density for certain projects. It's taken a while for the thing to get codified. In fact, it's still not codified. This has caused some confusion between developers and staff and council members as everybody tries to get affordable housing. So Richard Suttle, well-known lobbyist, very effective lobbyist, was representing Hotel Zsa Zsa, and he basically made the argument that there was nowhere for his clients to send a check. Further, you know, behind that is really it may not be quite legal to do do affordable housing the way that that the city's been doing it, and the mayor sort of pointed this out.
We heard some familiar noises from the mayor last meeting about how any discussion of benefits amounted to bargaining over zoning, which he cast in a negative, if not illegal, light. What is the thinking there?
It's a difficult issue. I have a story coming out in this week's Chronicle, basically centered on the mayor's concerns and what exactly the city can get away with and what it can't in terms of exchanging community benefits for density, increased density downtown. Turns out this is sort of a tightrope that everybody walks. There are state laws that prohibit inclusionary zoning, which means you can't straight up exchange affordable housing for density, say. And on top of that, you can't just generally agree to a one-time exchange, a one-time quid pro quo. That's called contract zoning. You can't really do it. Some folks would say that the city doesn't really do it anyway. Some folks might say that the city gets a little too close. I think the mayor would probably be on that list.
And another touchy subject from this week's work session, the item from Tovo and Morrison asking for a study of energy utilities that utilize an independent governing board. The discussion was pretty heated, with the mayor basically accusing them of trying to delay the push for an independent board until the legislature left town.
Some of the thinking is that an independent governing body would take some pressure off the city from the legislature, and that may be true. It would certainly relieve political pressure on the utility, which, you know, every time it wants to do a rate case every time it needs to raise its rates or make any kind of major change, it needs to go to city council. Nobody at the utility has gone on record in favor of an independent governing body, but I think it's clear that it would relieve a significant amount of pressure. Meanwhile, city manager Mark Ott has many times said that he would rather keep the utility under the city manager's office. He uses the phrase, the ship has been righted, and he's used that frequently. And I think so that's all lurking in the background. And council members Tovo and Morrison, sort of before that we leap into this effort to make the governing body of Austin Energy an independent entity, they want to take a look at 58 separate metrics for a host of utilities around Texas, and they'd like to extend that to around the country. This would be an enormous amount of work. And as you suggested, Wells, the mayor thought that perhaps this was just simply designed to delay any sort of independent governing body action until the legislature left town. Whether or not that's true, the study would certainly take a while, and it could certainly slow things up at the city. Council members Morrison and Tovo don't appear to have the votes to do the full study, so either this thing's going to get defeated or it's going to be dramatically scaled back. And even if it's dramatically scaled back, it's not clear whether council will wait for the study to come back to make a vote, to take a vote on the independent governing body.
Mike Cannon is a contributor to InFact Daily and the Austin Chronicle. Thanks for joining us, Mike.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Until next time, I'm Wells Dunbar with KUT News, and this is City Hall Hustle.